All right, hey everybody, this is Chief Math Sergeant of the Space Force, John Bentivania, with another episode of the Perigee Podcast. This is episode number 33 in the series. I'm here in Houston for the Air Force Sergeants Association event, the PEDS, and also in conjunction, we had the Guardian Development Conference right before. And I have a few of my teammates here that I want to take the opportunity to discuss some of the unique position, schooling opportunities at the Space Force we've been trying to develop and grow over the last couple of years. So I asked them to come up and to kind of have a conversation and kind of talk about where we are, what we've learned, and maybe share some insights. So if there are any Guardians that are out there listening to this and they've thought about, right, becoming a first sergeant, thought about teaching PME, or they're about to attend PME, talked about weapon school, or you know what it means to be in the honor guard and what that means, they can get some insight from our conversation today. So rather than kind of spend time for me to talk about you, I'm gonna ask you to kind of introduce yourselves and maybe just let everybody know kind of who you are, kind of what you do quickly, and then we'll start and get to a conversation. So I'll start with the first sergeant.
All right. Hey, good morning, Chief, and good morning, everybody. Thanks for having me on here. It's truly an honor. So my career's been kind of interesting, been kind of all over the place. So I joined the Air Force back in 2008. I was one of the last water walkers or tech controllers to go through. In 2009, they merged a lot of the comm career field together. So I've kind of done a lot of different things with the comm career field overall. I ended up getting selected to be an MTI, military training instructor. That kind of took me down there kicking and screaming. But I fell in love with that job, and I fell in love with helping people and the people side of it. So while I was there, towards the end of my career there, I joined the Space Force in 21. Ended up PCSing to Buckley, where I did some cyber, but I missed the people side of it. So I ended up going to the symposium there at Buckley and then becoming a t-shirt holding the phone. And then I found out that I just really wanted to be a first sergeant. Got the opportunity to fill in for close to a year at the 62nd, now the 64th Cyberspace Squadron as the acting first sergeant. And then was really lucky to get selected to be one of the first 13 to go to the academy. So went to the academy, came back, was a shirt for a few more months there, and then ended up PCing to the NRO, also on Buckley. From there, I was the flight chief for cyber, and then I just got selected from the latest talent management board to be a shirt again. So I've been a shirt, I've been cyber kind of like on and off, but I'll be a full-time shirt for the next couple of years. So that's me.
All right. When we get into some questions and discussion, I really want to get some of your feedback on
that. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
All right. So let's talk about PME and the fellowship.
Yes, Chief. So Senior Master Sergeant Brianna Fields, I am currently the Vice Commandant at the Vossler Academy. I used to be the NCO school Academy Schoolhouse on Peterson, but it's going to transition into all Guardians will come there for PME. I'm career intel by trade, been in about 14 and a half years, and spent most of my career very operations heavy, very joint between with the NSA and US Space Comm once I came over to the space side of things. So I'm very excited to get back to the service, see kind of what they're doing, and truly grow Guardians on the enlisted side from the get-go.
And, you know, as a service, with the fellowship concept, we've, you know, in addition to the experience that the Guardians get there, we're also changing what we're asking facilitators, not instructors, right? Is that the right phrase?
So we are transitioning back to instructors.
Okay, so back to instructors.
Because, so Chief List and I's thought process behind that, right, is facilitating is part of instructing.
Yeah.
But they are still instructing. So they're coaching, they're facilitating, they're instructing, all of the above.
Okay. So in a journey, I'd love to kind of get some of your perspective on that, right? To kind of update me so I'm kind of tracking.
Yes,
but also, right, to kind of share, because this is part of the, as a service last 4.5 years, right, the evolution of kind of where we're going. So to kind of keep everybody up to date on what that looks like. So you know, the other thing too of the service, and this is maybe one of the most nascent, you know, opportunities, the weapons school, right? You know, right now, I think we have one person in Intel school, I think, that's out at Nellis, but really trying to grow. That's probably one of the smallest cadres for enlisted web school, AIC, however, you know, whatever phrase we're using as we evolve that. But I think this is a great opportunity to kind of, let's talk about what that means, especially in the context of where we're going when we talk about, you know, the enlisted cadre of the warfighters of the service. So over to our AIC grad.
Awesome. Hi, Chief. Thanks for having me on today. I'm really excited. Obviously, I've been a champion from day one on the weapons school. I was around before we even started the Space AIC. And as we transitioned the Air Force weapons school to codify a program for our enlisted graduates out of the weapons school, not just codify, but actually like build in programmatics to continue a way to create domain experts and warfighters in our different AFSCs at that time. As the Space AIC came online, it was evident from day one that our enlisted cadre were the technical experts in that. So I should probably introduce myself. Hi, I'm Sammy Ward, Senior Master Sergeant type. I'm currently sitting out at Space Forces Indo-Pacific. Just recently stood up the Component Field Command there. Prior to that, I was in Delta 7 and in STARCOM working on some stuff. Joined the Space Force in 2021. And joined the Air Force way back in 2002, almost when dinosaurs ruled the earth. So excited to be here to talk about the opportunity today that Weapons School provides.
All right, thanks. All right, and then, you know, one of the requirements as a service, and I think it's congressionally mandated, or it's at least by DoD policy, is that each service has to have an honor guard. And, you know, obviously when we started, we're still under 10,000 uniformed guardians in the service. We always have this conversation about there's so many opportunities, so many things as a service we need to invest in, but we have to kind of do the risk analysis, right? You know, is pulling a guardian away from executing our core functions from operationally or, you know, foundationally building guardians, you know, where can we make investments to build relationships, to represent for advocacy, right? And that's a constant discussion. But when it came to the honor guard, you know, not only I think that we as a service think that it was the right thing to do early on, but, you know, having it that it was mandated kind of helped that decision. But I'm glad in a way because I think it's the right decision. So we have one of our honor guardsmen here. So
yes, sir.
I'll turn it over to you.
All right. Thank you, Chief. And for everybody, I'm Tech Sergeant Brandon Lightburn with the Space Force Honor Guard. I've been with the Honor Guard in a whole for past 5 years or so. Was one of the original 15 inter-service transfers to help stand up the Honor Guard. Right now we're sitting about 46 and just preparing for the next inauguration. The experience I've had there has just been amazing. I was able to be the first Guardian to perform at the Super Bowl, so that was a big deal. I believe I did your change of responsibility mm-hmm. as well, sir.
Yep.
So it's been a great time. I look forward to talking to all of you about it some more.
All right.
Yes, sir.
So, Senior Sergeant Fields, so Brandon, we just finished, I think, the execution of Fellowship 3. So another experience, an opportunity, right, for the new facilitator instructor to kind of have an opportunity to kind of guide us through that. So from your perspective as the Vice Commandant, how did that go? Are we preparing? Did the instructors, facilitators enjoy it? Did the cadre like being there? Where are we in the journey of the fellowship, the academy, and the things that your team is doing?
Absolutely, Chief. It's been amazing. So I'm going to be very blunt. And when I went to ALS and NCOA, I don't think I got a lot of value out of PME at the time. A lot of it is people talk about the networking, which I think is very valuable, but when you're an Intel airman that holds a TSSCI, you don't have anything to offer the finance troop in return, right? And so you don't really get those true networking capabilities and opportunities there. And a lot of the curriculum was outdated. It didn't apply anymore. And it just felt like checking a box. I got the opportunity to go to JASOFSI back in, I think, 2021 or 2022. And for the first time, my eyes were like, oh my gosh, PME can actually be this valuable. It was very up to date. I got networking out of it. I got knowledge out of it. And so that really inspired me for this upcoming position. So within fellowship, we're doing a lot of those same. We're getting into the joint doctrine. We're getting into a lot more experientials. And to me, the best part about it is it's iterative. So it's not, I remember being in NCOA and the instructor literally saying, oh, this doesn't apply anymore. It's not like this, but we still have to teach it.
Yeah.
And so with getting away from the accreditation, and we are looking at opportunities to get it accredited, but we're able to make it iterative and make on-the-spot changes, which is huge. And so it makes it way more relevant and credible of whatever's going on. the instructors and the whole cadre there is absolutely amazing. And I've never seen such a dedicated group of folks that are so passionate about getting it right and truly committed to growing and developing our Guardians. They have not only been instructing it, but they've designed the whole thing. Yeah. So we've held a few different sprints to get kind of feedback from the force about what we need and what they want. But all of it has been on the instructors and cadre to truly develop it from the ground up, which has been very, very incredible and inspiring to see. And how they're tying real world lessons of strategic thinking and strategic communication to games, like we play a werewolf game in there. And how that ties in and what people are taking out of it, it really gives me a bright look for what the Space Force is doing and where our Guardians are going to be developed at.
So, you know, I think when we do the special, you know, special duty boards, I don't know if I have my lexicon right, and Chief Scott's going to yell at me if I'm in Clemens. But someone gets an assignment, right? You're notified they're coming to Vossler. Can you just tell us a little bit about, like, how do you prepare a Guardian to do the things, all the amazing things that they're doing? Like, how do we prepare them for success? So what are we doing to pour into them?
So it's a pretty massive investment that we are putting into these Guardians that are coming to the schoolhouse. So they are still, we're still utilizing EPMEIC, which is an Air Force course that just teaches someone how to be a PME facilitator and instructor. We wanted to do it in-house, but we don't have the numbers to really make that effective because they need to be able to teach repetitively in front of their peers in a safer environment before they get on front at the podium. And so we are still sending them through that to get that initial instructor. And then we're investing so much time and money into sending them to things like Gallup coaching, into Epic facilitation courses. So they are coming out of the academy with so many certifications and qualifications that are applicable outside of PME. After they go through all of those various qualifications and different trainings, then they're going to be shadowing one of the other qualified instructors and on podium throughout an entire cohort before they are released on their own. So it is a massive spin-up time, a huge investment, but just in the short time I've been there, by far, they're some of the most qualified and credible and capable instructors that I've ever seen.
Is it a standard four-year tour?
So at this time, they're not coded. We're working with S1 to see if we can put some codes on them because of the investment. We just have to find the balance right of keeping them out of their career field for as long as we do. I think 3 years might be that magic number, but more to come on that.
Yeah, this is a little bit of the holistic challenge, right? Now, other than the weapons school, but for this group, it's the, you know, we change duty AFSCs, but we don't change our core specialty codes, right? If you're an intelligence operator, if you're a cyber operator, or if you're a space operator, that is still your primary Space Force FSC, right? You test, right, in that specialty. You kind of fill in a duty as an instructor, as an honor guardsman, as a first sergeant. So having that balance, because we're not pulling you out and putting you in a completely different long-term career path, that has been one of the challenges or discussions with what's that right timeline that from a warfighting subject matter expertise that they, whatever development they get, whether it be an instructor or getting a chance to work in honor guard or building their leadership as a first sergeant, get them back in, right, to that, the what they were trained for initially at tech school. So sure, let me ask you, so you said you've been kind of going in and out, right? You're an MTI for a little bit, you're doing back and forth in comm. And so you're in an 8F billet. You're actually in a first sergeant position right now?
Soon to be.
Because I think we're trying to update the books on what that is. And I think there's like 36 or 38 that collectively across the service, we said that, you know, based on what we could afford, quote unquote afford, to make full-time positions, we're about 38 and you just happen to kind of get one of those. But from your perspective, as a cyber operator, kind of weaving in and out, on a day-to-day basis, you're taking care of the human weapon system, but are you worried? Do you feel detached from your cyber background?
It's a good question. Cyber is hard to speak on because a lot of cyber is still in development. So a lot of things that have been developed are different for each squadron too. So when I was at the 62nd or the 64th, we used an entirely different weapon system than to than we had at the NRO to like to do our cyber. So there was like a whole another way to whole other set of things for me to learn. From the first sergeant standpoint, it's you need more than a year for sure, because like a lot of people say it takes about a year to like learn that job. So it's good that we're looking, I believe we're looking at about 2 year tours for first sergeant. So it's good that we're doing that, because the first year you're learning a lot from that perspective. But hard to speak on the cyber part, like I said, just because like a lot of it is really changing, a lot of it's really in flux for sure.
Okay. When did you graduate the First Sergeant Academy? How long ago?
That was just in October, just last year.
Okay, so a little less than a year. You know, so you were a guardian, right, in the Air Force First Sergeant Academy. What was that experience like?
It was pretty cool. Yeah, it was definitely special to be there. But they treated us like everybody else. Like they ended up splitting us up to where there was like two or three of us in each flight. And then we just went through the same exact training that they had, did every single thing that they did. I think the MTI experience was a lot for me to lean on more than anything there.
Yeah. Was the content, you know, we're talking about like the Vossler experience, right? And some previous experience we've had in the past, right? And we know that, you know, all the services, but in particular, right, across the Department of the Air Force, right, for great power competition and really, you know, a lot of things are changing. So even just when, you know, Airman Development Command, you know, which is AATC, right, they're really looking at, you know, their how they teach and what they teach, and they've made some changes. But from your perspective on the First Sergeant Academy, you know, your experience back in October, were the skills and the subject, the content, was it valuable to you? Did it prepare you for the roles and responsibilities we're asking you to do today?
I'd say yes and no, and I think most people who have been through the academy would say that. It was a lot of briefings, and there's a lot of good information. But really a lot of being a first sergeant is like on the job and like what you learn about like the actual like resources and like mentoring the people themselves.
Yeah.
So I know they were looking at developing some new curriculum on the Air Force side. I think I heard that they hadn't really changed a whole lot. So I think the academy could be better, but like I did learn a lot there, and the networking there was amazing. Just working with all the future first sergeants was incredible, but definitely could be improved upon for sure.
So, you know, talking about, you know, the how long you stay out of your specialty and, you know, what does that mean? So, Lightburn.
Yes, sir.
So, I'm assuming you did not go directly into Honor Guard. What did you do before you went Honor Guard?
So, I was a supply prior to coming to the Honor Guard. Okay. That was in June of 2019.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. We don't have supply in the Space Force.
Oh, no, we don't.
So do you know, have we already kind of had the discussion with you? What are you going to do when you finish Honor Guard?
I think they have me slide for defense cyber ops. But just like everybody else that goes through the Honor Guard, like all our young guardians, once I'm done my tour, I'll go to a new tech school, yep, learn that specialty, and then go right into the operations side of the house.
Yeah, I think that's what we call the D-Shred, so yes, 5 Charlie D-Shred for defensive cyber. Was that something that, I mean, were we able to kind of have a conversation with you based on what you're interested in? I mean, there's only three, right?
Yes,
Intel,
sir.
Right? Space and cyber. What was that process like when, you know, we came to you as a service and said, hey, thanks for joining the team. You're an honor guard. Now what?
So that process, it was more so everyone that wanted to volunteer, they checked ASVAB scores. Hey, are they eligible for TS? Everything like that. And from my understanding, all the CFMs sat down, they had a board, and it was pretty much draft day. Okay. Which was great for a lot of us. A lot of us got exactly what we wanted. So it was a very quick turnaround. I think it took maybe a couple months, a month or so, for decisions to be made. Okay. So
I mean, you refer like draft day. So when the CFM for cyber stood up and said, "Hey, pulled your name out of a hat," and said, "We recruit Lightburn," was that good, bad?
It was good for me. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's, well, let me ask you, right? Do you have an interest in, is it a hobby of yours? I mean, from a cyber perspective?
Honestly, sir, I have no cyber experience, but I'm excited, absolutely excited to learn something new. I felt like in supply, I got as much out of supply as I could, and definitely love learning. Yeah. And I think that's one of the greatest things with being over at the Honor Guard is that you get to experience so many different things. You get to learn so many different either sequences or regulations as far as protocol is concerned. It's something that I am passionate about. It's just the learning aspect. And I think being here has definitely developed me into being ready to do something else, do something better.
So I'm not coordinated enough to be an honor guard. So I've never been an honor guard. Maybe once or twice I've held the flag, and that was because they had nobody else. So from outside looking in, like I've 30 years, you know, it'd be my 30 year anniversary on Saturday, in a couple of days. I've had the opportunity to view honor guard from afar, like to be on the receiving end, right, of what the honor guard brings, right, to things that I'm at. So I have my perspective. I'm curious from you, right, as an honor guardsman, as a guardian, can you share a little bit, like, what does it mean to you? Like, when you're mentoring and developing the young guardians that are there, and you have airmen that are obviously have airmen that are there as well, but how do you describe it? What's your experience?
I think the best way to describe it is it's just humbling. It's just a very humbling experience. I remember my first military funeral as NCYC and handing off the flag to next of kin and giving the message of condolence. That very first time, it just really hit me. And I was like, this is exactly where I want to be right now. And it's the same thing that I try to tell these the young guardians that are coming in, and even the young airmen, because we're still all lumped in together right now, to maintain that mindset the entire way through. I know it gets hard because we train every day. Yeah. When we get the airmen and the guardians from basic training, they go straight into a 2-month tech school where it's just nonstop training from morning to night. So it gets a little stressful at times and it gets a little hard, but once you start doing those experiences that matter most to you, it really helps solidify what we're doing and why we do what we do.
Yeah, you know, this week, the last couple of days at AFSA, not only at our, you know, Guardian development on Saturday and Sunday, but, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and a little bit this morning, right? There's been a constant kind of theme we've been talking about the last 5 days, 6 days, about culture and identity. You know, we have the narrow standards, right? We talk about standards, but I think some of the discussion, I think, where at least my head is that if we have a meaning of purpose and we have a meaning of culture and identity, that the standards piece will just kind of take care of itself. And, you know, the identity and culture of being an honor guard, again, from outside looking in, to represent not only the service, right? Especially us as guardians, right? We're only 4.5 years into this journey, right? So I know you still wear the traditional, you know, Department of the Air Force chassis on your uniform, but you're wearing guardian stripes.
Yes, sir.
Right? So people know, right, you're a guardian, right? Even if it's maybe the same chassis, but they see the stripes. They know that you're a guardian when you're out there. So to represent the service from that perspective, but then to represent the nation and some of the, I mean, you were at the Super Bowl.
Yes, sir.
You want me to keep saying that. That's why you said draft. That's why you said draft day. You're going to talk about football analogies all day today.
All day, sir.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. So when there's like, what, 16 now non-prior service guardians from BMT? About 2 classes?
Yes, sir. So I believe we have 6 that are graduating on Friday and 22 that are inbound.
Okay.
As well as 3 inbound NCOs. So we're slowly creeping up there. Because just as young as the Space Force is, the Space Force Honor Guard is only a year old at this point. I think we stood up in August of last year. That's when we transferred over. Yeah. So we're slowly getting up there, sir.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate what you do. And I mean, like I said, I came and had a chance to do the deep dive, right? The immersion,
yes, sir.
With you guys, and my wife was with me, and absolutely so impressed, right, with the training and but also seeing you out in the things that you do for us and for the nation. So thanks for that.
Thank you, sir.
So Sammy, mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about weapons school. You know, we kind of have the squadron, and we currently teach our own space AIC for enlisted space operators. I think we're on path, right? We get slots at the Air Force Intelligence AIC, and I think we're working on a cyber AIC. So for the intel specifically, right? So I think there's one there now. When we went through that process, was it just one seat did we get, or were there more seats and we just had trouble kind of getting, you know, volunteers to kind of raise their hand and you know, challenge themselves with that opportunity?
Yeah, so speaking specifically to Intel, I don't think space has quite, or space operators have quite as much of a challenge of getting folks in, but for Intel specifically, so Space Force has a presence at the Weapons School in both the 19th Weapons Squadron, which is the Intelligence Weapons Squadron, and the 328th Weapons Squadron, which is the Space Warfighter Squadron. With that, currently we have in the Space Force, there were three of us that came over as intelligence AIC grads. And then obviously any of the previously one Charlie Sixes that had made it through the Space Force curriculum came over as well. Since then, we have had a couple of officers go through the intelligence course, and we've had one Tech Sergeant, Tech Sergeant Select Cassidy Basney, has gone through the 19th. We've had a couple others, both on the officer and enlisted side, going through the intelligence course that just didn't make it through. Yeah. Spin-up requirements for Intel are a little bit different, and this is one of the challenges we can talk to if you want. For the Intel course, it takes a minimum of 6 to 9 months of spin-up, right? And the reason for that is because that course, while we have made exceptional improvements in making space-focused tracks for that course, it's still very air-focused in a couple of areas. With that, we're coming online eventually in the next couple of years with a new Intel course to fall underneath the 328th Weapons Squadron, which will change some of the requirements. But I just have to shout out to my rustic brothers and sisters at the 19th. They have done an incredible job of making a space-focused track with that. From a challenges in recruiting perspective, I think it's twofold, right? I think we have had folks compare our AIC grads to WIC graduates and say, well, they're doing the same job as an officer. Why do they not get treated the same? And why are things a little different? And I think we're working really hard to define what that looks like and why that is. But in the end state for the intelligence course, they go through an identical curriculum, day 1 to 10 whatever of training, with their officer counterparts, right? It's exactly the same curriculum. The space AIC is getting ready to do a very similar approach with that. And then in the next couple of years, they're working through a cyber tacticians course. I can't remember what exactly the acronym is that they're going to use, but it's a cyber tacticians course that will eventually turn into an instructor course as well, advanced and weapons. So back to your original question, I think the challenges with recruiting, part of that is spin up and pulling somebody out of a dedicated operation to do academic spin up with them. That's been a little challenging. Two, I think just the intensity of the course and understanding the challenges that you're going to go through as a student, and then it doesn't stop there. Once you get out of the schoolhouse, you continue to be your unit's reliable, like combat credible advisor to the commander. And I think that's not to say nobody else is combat credible. I want to be very clear about that, right? But there is specialized training over the course of 6 months within either intelligence or space weapons and warfighters on not just how to be a technical expert in your system, but how to integrate that across capability. And those are a couple of the challenges. The other piece of that is, and just being completely blunt, as Bree said earlier, I'm not 100% sure that it's been valued by everyone yet. Right. Yeah. And I think that there's been some challenges of, well, why would I send an enlisted person to do a course that officers have previously done? I think we spend a lot of time talking about how our enlisted folks are going to be the backbone and the expert warfighters. And I think that we will continue to see an increase in the requirement for the training that the Weapons School offers. It's not just about being good at your job. It's, can you teach and integrate your capabilities into cross-domain solutions, into our nation's hardest problems, and use that background in critical thinking to build the people around you, to teach the folks at your line unit, to lead operations, and then to serve your fellow guardians.
Yeah. So the circle back in the beginning. So and correct me if I'm wrong, you know, in this, the curriculum challenge, the 328th, which is the space WIC and NAIC, we own it. That's a Space Force squadron, and that's ours. The 19th is actually an Air Force.
It is.
Right. So that's, and actually, I'm going to Goodfellow Friday to go talk to them. And I was at Keesler for the cyber school, right, where we are sending guardians to airmen, Air Force owned and executed schools, and similar challenge, right? Like, you know, for the small number of guardians sending through, they're sending through hundreds, right, of airmen. So the course is designed for airmen, sending airmen through. So as we go on this journey and design our own courses, I think that'll get more space-minded warfighter-centric as opposed to air-minded warfighting. So we'll continue to go on that journey as we get after it. You know, this discussion on that we have, which is a fair one, right, about, you know, hey, I go to the same school, but yet, you know, I'm a tech sergeant and I'm in class with a captain or a major. And we kind of draw that distinction. Why would I do that? You know, it's all about, and we talked about this week, right? It's how do we allow guardians to be the best versions of themselves, right? We know that as an enlisted cadre, the journey we're going on, right? We're the war fighters of the service, the subject matter experts in the weapon systems. So the fact that there are courses that exist today and that we have the talent that can go through and pass these courses, why would we not, right, want to pour into guardians, regardless of what they're wearing, stripes or bars, to do that? I mean, it's almost like saying, why would we pay for you to get your master's or bachelor's? You don't need that to be a tech sergeant, but yet we encourage you to go to school, get the education, right? So these are technical skills, right? It's just opportunities to pour into guards, just like education with industry, right? For that was another opportunity. We couldn't get an EWE person on the board today, but that was primarily like an officer kind of thing. But we said, hey, like we have very talented enlisted guardians and airmen as well. That could benefit from these experiences and come back, right? And under the specific roles and responsibilities that we each have, you can leverage these skills to help you execute those roles and functions more effectively and efficiently than if you didn't have it. But I know we kind of had this conversation, and there's a few different areas very similar where we had the officer and enlisted discussion, but. But for you, you know, other than you know the school and the experience, you know, so you graduated, you know, in this context, how has being a graduate made you? What has your journey been like since you graduated? Has it helped you? Have you leveraged it? You know, now looking back, right, graduated a couple of years ago, what has the journey been for you wearing a patch on your arm?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for asking that question. That's fun. And I will say that experiences vary across the board, right? There's a lot of different types of jobs that AIC grads can fill. For me specifically, I do have one quick go back, and I just want to offer that from the intelligence perspective, the best foundation and the best of the best from the intel world will go through the 19th Weapons Squadron and get the training in intelligence tradecraft and how to apply that. That's what makes the intel course slightly different is we have to apply the tradecraft to integrate capabilities where on the space or cyber or pick a platform that the Air Force flies, it's a little more about the technical proficiency and how to bring that capability to bear. So from an intel perspective, I will offer that it has completely broadened me. I'm a career all source analyst. Prior to joining the Space Force, I was a 1-0, and I've had some very strange, I don't think I've had your typical 1-0 experience, but I did get some briefing time and I have worked with some folks downrange. I've got a few deployments under my belt, but for me, where it really changed my life going through the weapons school. First and foremost, I didn't want to go initially. It was kind of one of those like, hey, you really should go to these things. Mm-hmm. And I went, found out I made master sergeant while I was in the schoolhouse, right? And so my experience is different than what we built for the tiered structure moving forward. With that, I got one deployment in as a tier one, if you will, with the third wing out of Alaska. We took some F-22s downrange, did some fun stuff. And that was fun because I was the technical expert. I worked off shift with my officer patch that was also in his tier one. We had a partnership. It was great. And I learned a lot about the application of intel tradecraft at that point. Moving forward, I got hired to go back and be the superintendent at the 19th Weapons Squadron. And I will tell you that that is the most humbling opportunity I've had from a leadership challenge perspective in my career. When you are working to lead the best of the best that are all smarter than you, and you are in a learning mode every single day, that's not without its challenges, right? But we had some great wins there. And I think I'll shout out to Chief Master Sergeant retired Lori Bach, who really championed the idea of enlisted patches at the weapons school. So I went to weapons school before there were actually patches, which is crazy. But in 2018, we really got some traction. Now, Major General Beamer, he just pinned on last week, was really an advocate for enlisted capability being brought into the weapons school and codifying what that looks like and standardizing it and making sure that it was credible when we were out in the field with a patch on our arm. I got the experience of designing the patch and doing some of that stuff. So when I say I'm an old hat patch, like I'm an old hat patch. But taking that capability, I think that I would offer that it's one of the reasons that I feel like I was selected to come to Space Force. Being able to build something, being able to lay the foundation and move forward. And I'm really good at laying the concrete and then saying, peace, I'm out and going on to build the next thing, right? But in my experience, I cannot count another day outside of my time at the weapons school where I felt 100% lethal every day in my job, right? And it's because the tactical scenarios, the application, and the tradecraft that you've learned being applied, and then elevating your game, because not only do you have to be on point for your students, but you have to be on point for everyone around you all day, yeah, because you are solving real problems. And bringing that experience into the field, while I went on to do your standard leadership positions, squadron superintendent, now I'm in a really cool position in Space Forces and INDOPAC, right? I'm applying my decade and a half worth of experience in INDOPACOM, coupled with my experience as a patch, to really do some fun stuff and train up folks in what we're doing and why the fight matters.
Thanks for that. I'll have to come back to you because I think I want to have some more questions. You and I have talked about this before. We could talk for an hours on this. But I do want to talk about, the experience and how, like, doing the job, what does that look like? So, our model for sergeants, right, we had a lot of discussion on what, as a Space Force, we were going to do with for sergeants. And, we went into this discussion with absolute understanding that the command triad, right, what the first sergeant brings to the command team was vitally important. But I think we also had a little bit of a discussion on had we maybe started thinking and have a little bit of a culture where we were leveraging so much leadership and caring for people at the front door of the first sergeant. Where supervisors, whether it be officer, civilian, enlisted, and just general NCOs, human service responsibilities, were not being applied for the basic care and feeding and taking care of their people. And, and we just kind of defaulted to the first sergeant. That's the first sergeant thing. We said, hey, we still need first sergeants, maybe not just the number, one, we just don't have the people to do all that and the billets. But second, our vision of what it means to be a supervisor and a non-commissioned officer in the Space Force is going to be different. Let me not say it different. We really want to create a culture where we're empowering our supervisors and NCOs and expecting more from them. So as we looked at the foundation at the tactical level should be firmer and stronger and more defined, that the need, if we had less first sergeants at all these different echelons, we'd still be okay taking care of people, because somewhere in that chain, when a supervisor or flight chief needed that, there's somebody they can go kind of mentor. That's the vision. That's kind of how we're going. But since you've been doing it, I kind of get like some of your experience, your perspective, and is that message resonating? Have we clearly communicated to you as a first sergeant what that new dynamic is that we're trying to create within the 663?
So yeah, I would agree with a lot of that, Chief. A lot of that has been communicated, that's kind of like the way that we're going ahead with a lot of things. So speaking, kind of going back to like what you said previously of like with the discussions that have happened, I'm extremely happy that we exist, because some of the initial talk was that we would kind of do maybe like the Navy model, maybe do like a chief's mess kind of a thing. I'm glad we didn't go that way, because what makes the Air Force so special, if you talk to anybody in any service branch, is like the quality of life. And I feel like the first sergeant is a big part of that. So I'm glad that we've taken a lot of what the Air Force first sergeant is, and we've kind of used that in our own way. But to me, that's extremely important. And like you said, like it's extremely important that you have somebody in that chain of command who is a first sergeant, because there's certain benefits to having a first sergeant in your chain of command. Because, well, number one, he's not raiding anybody. He's outside of your chain of command. So there's a comfortability for people to come to a first sergeant because he's not their supervisor. Yeah. Additionally, first sergeants also have like HIPAA rights. So like I can call, you know, a medical facility and I can see what's going on with, you know, airmen, whoever, or specialist, whoever, to see what's going on. So there are certain things that we can't push to supervisors and senior NCOs that you do need a first sergeant for. So I'm extremely happy that we have first sergeants. So I think this is kind of one of the questions that I had for you was, because we're pushing more onto NCOs and senior NCOs, like, are we thinking about additional training for them? Or is there anything like that we're gonna do to actually help them since there'll be people filling more first sergeant like mentorship roles?
Yeah, so I'm gonna phone a friend. So if the vice commandant for the Foster Fellowship is in the room, maybe this is a discussion we can just have openly amongst all of us.
So yeah, I think some of those critical lessons and applicability from the First Sergeant Symposium or the First Sergeant Academy, we are integrating into the fellowship models and just to the schoolhouse as a whole. Long-term planning, we're trying to do, in addition to the fellowship models, also a supervisor course and a superintendent course. And so we're really having to look at what is training for leadership specifically versus these specific roles so that you're truly getting PME when you need it and it's not late to need like it used to be. From a lot of the feedback, we had a few shirts in our last fellowship three cohort, and they said that a lot of what they're teaching at the academy is already kind of integrated into what we're doing. And really the biggest probably pro of going to the academy is the networking and the resources you learn there. And so I think it's something we can definitely get as a mix between the schoolhouse and then also the symposiums on base. I think those are hugely beneficial.
I would agree. The first symposium I went through, I was just like, why haven't I learned any of this like till now? Because some of the resources that are out there are incredible.
It is, and everyone. Just having sat as an additional duty shirt for a little over a year, my experience was that it's all in the networking and the resources that are out there. And so, in addition to the symposium, it was going to those Diamond Council meetings and talking with my fellow Diamonds of, okay, this is what's out there. This is a problem I have. How would you handle it? Because this is just leadership 101. We don't do anything on our own. We do it with our battle buddies. Whatever we're calling it in the Space Force. And so I think it's important to make those connections and on a daily basis instead of just when you need it. Because those are the shirts that I found that really struggled where they don't phone a friend until they're in a dire situation. And then they're like, well, what have you done for the Diamond Council? So.
Yeah, you know, when we're having these discussions and kind of going on this journey with the first sergeant, you know, some of the things from my head was that the first sergeant opportunity is just another leadership challenge, right? That the skills and attributes that you need to have to be a first sergeant and that you gain from there, probably very similar, right? If you're a squadron SEL, if you're a field command SEL, right? If you're going to lead other organizations and be part of a command team at every echelon. So, you know, when we said that we're not gonna make it just another AFSC or SFSC, it was about, it's just another opportunity through the development model, right? Where we can give guardians the opportunity to challenge them and let them hone those team building skills, those connection skills, networking skills, to get a chance to do that. The other, some of the discussion too, and I'm not 100% where we are, but you know, I think the Air Force offered us more seats at the academy than we had needs for to produce shirts. And what I had said was, I would like to keep those seats full, and that even if in a normal development model of a master sergeant, hey, you want to go to the academy? I don't have a first sergeant billet. I don't plan necessarily to make you put you in an 8F billet, make you full time first sergeant. But do you want to go to a leadership course? I mean, I've gone to leadership 30 years, right? I've gone to a lot of leadership courses that didn't necessarily send me into a job right away, but it just added right to my toolbox. But it wasn't directly applicable. But it was an opportunity to kind of broaden my perspective and, you know, take a knee a little bit, do a little TDY and pour into myself. So, you know, I see this as, you know, we keep sending people to the academy because I think it's, you know, depending how we evolve the fellowship, but if there are things unique there, that let's take advantage of it, right? Because I'm just developing you as a leader in general. And then you just happen to have the skills when a first sergeant position comes open, hey, do you want to apply and actually get into an 8F billet? You know, maybe you already have the school you went a couple of years ago, you were doing other things, or maybe you didn't. But the other thing, and what I would ask of you, and this is kind of for the broader audience, is, you know, in this model, right, where I see your role and position on the command team is that direct mentoring, supporting, and advising not only the commander, but your supervisors within your organization, right? So that the skills you have, rather than, you know, it's like, hey, you know, teach a person to fish, right? So when people are coming to you about, hey, I'm having, you know, I need help working through this for my airman or guardian, you know, rather than, hey, drop them off, I'll take care of it, I'll write up the paper or do whatever. It's like, hey, so here's my advice. This is what I recommend, right? You want to write it up, or here's a couple phone numbers or some people you could talk to, right? But how are we kind of you mentoring, pouring back into that supervision in the organization to help grow them and not let them just drop stuff, you know, at you? So the caring for people passion that you have, you got to keep that. But I also would ask that you got to equal that with, you know, developing people, right? You want to care for them, but you want to challenge, right? To supervise, challenge your NCOs, challenge your senior NCOs, your teammates. Like I said, you're not in a rating change. You'd rather be a senior mass sergeant or in the mass sergeant, right? Same. Hey man, like, this is probably something you could do yourself. I'll help you do it. I'll work you through it, but don't just drop it on my desk, right? That's a little bit of a different nuance, right? So a unique opportunity for you and all first sergeants to get out there, and the difference in the culture they're trying to create. And it'll take years, right? As the Vassar Academy or whatever it is, right, starts to develop the curriculum and integrate it into Fellowship 1, which 25 maybe we'll have, late 25.
So we're actually going to be executing our first kind of trial course, hopefully in November.
Yeah.
Chief.
So a lot of opportunities to kind of, right, as we do this. But we're in this transition phase. So this is where, you know, whether as we, you know, shape what the fellowship looks like, right, try to solidify the roles and responsibilities and the culture of the first sergeants, right? Continue the, hey, how do we inspire people, encourage them to go to AIC, right? And kind of challenge themselves. And, you know, how do we talk to leaders so that units understand how to use, right, a weapons school grad who's wearing stripes? And what does that mean? And kind of addressing, you know, the elephant in the room about, hey, this isn't about officer and enlisted. It's about trying to make technical subject matter experts. Right. And then from, you know, understanding that, you know, honor guard now is part of the normal development track. So in addition, right, to the BMT individuals that were going there, we need NCOs and senior NCOs, right, that are representing the service, representing the nation, and that there is value, right, there's opportunity in that, in addition to looking sharp and uniform. But actually, this is a question I have for you. We talk about leadership, you know, and challenges. And, you know, I think sometimes there's a perception that, you know, if you're not at the operational side, right, you don't, well, I don't have leadership. You don't get leadership opportunities. I don't get challenged because I'm in another different type of organization. So, you know, you're an NCO, right?
Yes, sir.
You're at the honor guard. You've been there for a couple of years. Now, you, right, you had experience on the outside as a supply.
Yes, sir.
Right? So what's your... When you say, hey, or do you get leadership and challenge opportunities in the honor guard?
Yes, sir. Constantly, actually. When I first got to the honor guard during tech school, I found out I made a tech sergeant. So as soon as I graduated tech school, I was thrown right into the NCYC role. The pallbearers, 50 or so strong? So that was completely brand new to me. I came from a small warehouse in Dover with maybe 3 or 4 people under me, and now I have 50 brand new airmen straight from BMT, never went through a tech school, didn't get their specialty yet. So that was a challenge, but it was definitely something to help me grow as a leader, because shortly after that, during the interim, I took over as flight chief. So definitely, and all of our NCOs that we have, whether it's Air Force or Space Force, they all get presented with those same leadership, opportunities as well, where they come from different bases and they probably have zero supervisory experience. Yeah. But they get there and they're, hey, these guys are yours. Figure out the schedule, figure this out. And
luckily we do have good leaders over there already to help develop these NCOs to do the job appropriately. And it is fun. It is challenging. Because like I said, we're in DC and these airmen, these guardians, they're coming from small towns right out of BMT. That's their first duty station. Sometimes they go a little crazy, but it's our job to reel them back in and keep their head on straight.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciate that because I said, you know, it's new for us, a year in October as a service having an honor guard and to kind of understand, right, when we offer those opportunities, you know, to individuals, you know, because we need NCOs or senior NCOs to go, that they understand that, you know, it's another, you know, opportunity to grow themselves, but also like a lot of things to kind of give back. You know, that's one of the things generically, right, for all these, right, whether it be, you know, going to weapons school, teaching at the academy, becoming a first sergeant or working in honor guard, but like all the kind of special duties that we have. You know, we talk about talent management and, you know, when the board meets, right, we kind of ask those four questions, like, what has the member done? Looking at the records, what, based on that, what do we think the member can do? What's in the best interest of the service and what's in the best interest of the member? And sometimes we look at that as you know, hey, what are you doing? How are you challenging the guardian? What are you doing for the guardian? I think there's a lot of discussion to be had about, hey, maybe there's a little something Lightburn I can do for you by going honor guard, but it's more about what you're going to do for the honor guard, right? So what is it that, you know, every job opportunity, we want to keep people engaged and challenged, but that may be on a lower scale as from and less of an impact on you personally and more about the impact that you are going to make on the organization and the guardians in your charge. And I think there's value sometimes having those discussions with somebody when they think that, well, I mean, you want to send me there, ask me to do that. I mean, I don't know. Is that a step up? You know, like we kind of have this philosophy, right? We think about climbing the ladder, but maybe sometimes it's about taking a step or two back, extending a hand and helping somebody up, right? Instead of climbing all the time. And I think that's value in the culture and the philosophy that we're trying to have as a service to kind of get after that. So, well, I think we're like out of time and it went by really fast. So I really appreciate you kind of spending some time with me, you know, here in Houston. I know I think we're missing maybe a panel. I hope you had a chance to eat lunch. I didn't prevent you from doing that. But thank you for what you do. Thank you for who you are. Thanks for inspiring the next generation. It's amazing to think, right, that what I say yesterday, it's like 36% of the guardians in the service today have less than 5 years of military time, and we're only 4.5 years old. So collectively, we are, right, building the foundation and kind of helping shape the culture for the generations of guardians that are come behind us. Like, you know, we've been using the phrase OGs, right, the original guardians, right? They're not going to know supply, right? They're not going to know, right, being a comm, right, being an intel in the Air Force, right? They're not going to know those things. They're just going to know what we, all of us, right, set the conditions for them every single day. And I think I like to look at it. I don't want to put them in a box. I don't want to put them in an Air Force box. I don't want to put them in an Army box, a Marine Corps box, right? I want them to have the freedom of maneuver to develop the service that guardians want, that guardians deserve. So it's kind of gray space for us for a little bit. But I have confidence in all of you, right, and all of us that we'll be able to kind of do that. So thanks for what you're doing. And hopefully, man, people listen to this, they get inspired. And I'm going to say, feel free to reach out and call them anytime, email them, ask questions about the Honor Guard, AIC, becoming an instructor schoolhouse, or first sergeant stuff. So we'll cut it here. And so, hey, thanks everyone for tuning in. I appreciate it. I don't know when my next podcast will be, but we try to get them out as often as we can, but also make them conversations meaningful and relevant so that people want to dial in and listen. But this is Chief B9 out from Houston. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Chief.